If you are chastened by God, you deserved it. Let's talk about it on this edition of Key Life.
Hi, that was Steve Brown, and I'm Mike Keller. You're listening to Key Life, practical Bible principles for daily living. Now, here with Bible in hand is Steve.
Thanks, Mike. If you have your Bible, turn to 1 and 2 Chronicles as we go on through our study of the Old Testament. We're not doing a verse-by-verse expositional commentary on the Old Testament. We're rather just kind of hitting the top of the mountains as we fly by, so that you can go back and investigate what's really going on down deeper. It's my fond hope and prayer that I'm giving you handles and also trying to communicate to you my great love for the Old Testament and the teaching of grace that runs everywhere. You know, there are two covenants. There's the Old Covenant and the New Covenant. But in fact, there is only one covenant, and those are two manifestations of that one covenant. You say, I didn't know that. Well, aren't you glad you're listening to Key Life? The one covenant is a covenant of grace. I mean, this thing's always been about grace. It always will be about grace. It's God's unmerited favor. Nobody's good enough. And so the Older Testament is an old manifestation of God's grace, and the New Testament is a new covenant in God's grace, both of them manifestations of the overriding covenant of grace. If you were listening yesterday, I took the time to give you an outline of these two books, to suggest who wrote it and when it was written, what it's about. And then I'm going down just a couple of side roads where we get into the actual text. And yesterday we noted the difference between Kings and Chronicles. That difference lies in one fact, and it's this: Kings looks at history from the perspective of a proud people. Chronicles looks at that same history from the perspective of a conquered people. And the message is really different. The message of 1 and 2 Chronicles is kind and pastoral. Now, there are times when the lion, though he's not safe, can be pretty scary, but he's still good. But mostly, 1 and 2 Chronicles has a pastoral feeling to it. And the books of Kings do not have that feeling. And I suggested yesterday that grace always runs downhill. I also suggested that there's a methodology in that. If you want to check out this difference when it's really stark, check out Isaiah. Now, if you're a liberal, you believe that Isaiah was a family. You believe at least there were two of them. There was the first Isaiah, and then there was Deuteronomy Isaiah, the second Isaiah. And that break is in the 40th chapter. And from the 40th chapter, there's a new guy that comes along, another prophet by the name of Isaiah, who wrote the rest of the book of Isaiah. May I say, with great respect and love and kindness, are you crazy? That's not true. In fact, when they went into the Dead Sea Scrolls, and by the way, and this is just as an aside, when they checked out the Dead Sea Scrolls, we found manuscripts that were 1,000 years older than any extant manuscripts at that time. That was in the late 40s. And all the liberals said, oh, man, we're going to find one scroll for Isaiah and another scroll for 2 Isaiah. And they unrolled it, and there was no break. It was all one. But let me tell you, the reason there's such a break is because at the beginning, God's people needed to be chastened, and they deserved it. And from the 40th chapter on, God's people were broken. They needed to be loved. They needed to be cared for. They needed to hear a lot about grace. So in terms of practical application, if you're really going through a tough time, don't center your devotional time on Isaiah 1 through 40. It'll keep you awake at night. Start at the 40th chapter of Isaiah, where it opens with these words, "Comfort, comfort my people, says your God." Now let me give some examples of how this works. For instance, in Luke 11, 37 through 53, some very harsh, in fact, Jesus was simply not very nice here, to be honest with you, or kind or sweet. I mean, this is not the kind of Jesus who is sweet, gentle Jesus you want to walk through the garden with, or with whom you want to walk through the garden, for you English teachers. I mean, in Luke 11, 37 through 53, Jesus says some of the harshest, meanest things that you've ever heard in your life. If you said this to anybody, anytime, and you're young, your mother would wash your mouth out with soap. And if you did it in a university, they'd fire you because you weren't politically correct. He says that these guys are whitewashed tombs. They're graves, man, filled with rotten stuff on the inside. That's Jesus, gentle Jesus, meek and mild. And then you go to John 8, 1 through 11. Remember the woman who was caught in adultery? She's been condemned by everybody. The world's come to an end. She's so ashamed. She's so down. That's when Jesus wrote in the ground. We don't know what he wrote, but that's this passage where he said, "Let he who is without sin among you cast the first stone." And you remember? You remember when they looked up, everybody left. And then he said to her, "Where are your accusers, woman?" And she said, "They're not there." Then he said, "Neither do I accuse you. Go and sin no more." Now, what's the difference between Luke 11, 37 through 15 and John 8, 1 through 11? The difference is, in Luke 11, 37 through 53, Jesus is dealing with arrogant, prideful, and might I say, religious people. I mean, these are the leaders. These are the good people. These are the people who always do it right. And look what Jesus said. And then you get to John 8, and what's the difference there? Jesus is dealing with somebody who didn't do anything right, who was a sinner and who knew it. What was the difference? The difference is that in the latter case, grace always runs downhill. One was up, needed correction. One was down, needed affirmation. I don't want to spend too much more time on it, but look at 2 Corinthians 7, 13 through 16 if you've got a Bible. You read the words here, "Therefore we are comforted, and besides our own comfort, we rejoice still more in the joy of Titus, because his mind had been set at rest by you all. For if I have expressed to him some pride in you, it was not put to shame. But just as everything we said to you was true, so our boasting before Titus has proved to be true. And his heart goes out all the more to you, as he remembers the obedience of you all, and the fear and trembling with which you received him. I rejoice, because I have perfect confidence in you." Now, you got to have to read what goes before in order to think, what? You just been telling them they're ugly and their mother dresses them funny. Paul, what happened? It's sort of like that Bill Cosby comedy bit when the grandmother comes to visit his children and he says, "Kids, this isn't the same woman I grew up with." And so you're reading Paul in 2 Corinthians 7. What's going on here? Paul had admonished them. He had told them really bad stuff about them. And then Titus comes and says, "They've repented. They're broken. They love you, Paul." And that's when he writes 2 Corinthians 7, 13 through 16. The proud needed chastening. The obedient needed praise. I think I may have told you, probably on more than one occasion, we have a new German Shepherd in our home. His name is Thor. We decided to let him out of his cage last night. I got a call from Anna this morning and said he ate up the rug, so we got to put him back in his cage at night. But Thor is so very obedient. The other day, Thor went through a neurotic period when he was afraid of me. Now, he's been trained harshly by somebody else, not me. And when you say come, he comes. When you say sit, he sits. When you say bad, he whines and gets on the floor. When you say down, he gets down. I mean, this is an obedient dog. I know Thor is a pagan name, but he acts like a Christian. And something happened. I don't know what it was. And Thor, when I'd come into a room, he'd run into another room. And I thought, I've corrected him a couple of times, but I haven't done anything that. And then I said, "Come, Thor." And he ran. But you could see in his eyes, he really was saying, "I'm of two minds about this. I've been trained to be obedient, but I'm not going to him. He's going to kill me." So he just ran, and he was doing it. And mostly he'd run to Anna, because she's kind of the soft place, my wife. In fact, our kids did that, too. At any rate, so I said, "Anna, you go out of the room," and we shut the door. And so and Thor didn't have any place to go. I said, "Thor, come." And he wanted to run, but there was no place to go. So finally, he kind of slinks over to him, and I give him a treat. Pat him on the back, say, "You know, you're the best thing since sliced bread. You're the best dog anybody ever had." And he looked so relieved. And I said, "All right, run along." And then another minute, I'd say, "Thor, come." And he'd come a little bit faster this time, but not really speedily, because he still wasn't sure. It took me 40 times without Anna, a bunch of treats, and a lot of scratching behind the ears to get Thor so he would come to me. And the reason I did that, now, we weren't nice to him when he ate the rug last night. I just want you to know that. Because he was proud he'd chewed up the rug. Now, at that point, he needed chastening. But when he was so afraid, and he was so down, he got scratched behind the ears. God knows what we need, because he loves us. Because he's our father. Because we're not illegitimate. And because of that, if you're being chastened, and you deserved it, but he's not going to reject you. He loves you. And the sign of his love is the reality of his chastening. I see so many kids who would give anything if their father loved them or their mother loved them enough to discipline them. Huh. So we got a couple of principles here. When you're up, be careful. When you're down, grace pours into your life. And God always loves, but don't mess around. You think about that. I'm in. Are you a part of our Key Life Tape family? It's really easy. If you'll give us a call, 1-800-KEY-LIFE, you can do that 24 hours a day. It's automated. Hit a zero and you'll get a live person. Or you can write Key Life, Post Office Box 5000, Maitland, Florida, 32794. Or Key Life Canada, Post Office Box 32150, Cambridge, Ontario, M3H5M3. Or you can email us at steve@keylife.org with your regular mailing address and ask to be a part of Key Life Tapes. And thereafter, every few weeks, you'll automatically get a tape. Now, these are not the tapes of the broadcast. You have to subscribe to those. And if you ask us, we'll tell you how. These are tapes of places where I teach the Bible at Reformed Theological Seminary in Orlando. At the Lake Barclay Fellowship that's coming up this week, or at the Billy Graham Training Center. We tape those, and we send them out to our Key Life Tape family absolutely free. And when I say they're free, I really do mean that. But it doesn't mean we'll turn down a contribution. If you can help us, you'll be a part of a very small minority, but you'll help so many people. So if you can, pray about it. Be as generous as you can. You can charge it on your MasterCard, Visa, Discover card. Include it in your envelope. And for any contribution of any size, when you request it, I'll send along the cassette teaching, A Word for the Discouraged. I got to go. Hey, listen, check out our website, keylife.org. Give us the call letters of this station. And Key Life is a production of Key Life Network.